What's what is going on, guys? Wow, yeah. A lot has happened, and we're recording on March 10th, 2025. This is going to be somewhat more about GrapheneOS updates that have definitely improved my user experience, and some like news, some services that I found that I enjoy, the browser disappointment, the browser disappointment that has been going on, and some other things that's been in the back of my head. Now, GrapheneOS has had some good release and updates. Probably this should be your reason to switch. Just go on like go get a Pixel 7, 8, I'd say 8, maybe the 9 if you can. If you got some cash, you got money, throw it and just do it. Get the A series if you're like, you don't want to spend that much money. The Pixel 8a is good. The 9a will be probably out sometime later this year, before the 10 drops, and that's what I would do. That's how I would go about it. There's not really a good solution or answer for that. So in the last couple months, they've pretty much implicated some things that I think that is needed there. They have put in something called block, like calling. Like they have like something where if somebody calls you that's in your contacts, it'll block. It'll block the call. So that might help with spam. That's kind of awesome. We've needed that for a long time. Apple has it. We've definitely needed it. They've restricted 5G only mode to carriers with 5G standalone support to avoid setting the options silently failing. They have network location add build to battery optimization except to avoid being blocked from accessing the network. Network location, they got this other really cool thing called it's kind of like their network location to help with GPS data, like to get GPS data. It's kind of interesting. So what they do is they take a network location, they take your network location and it works off Wi-Fi scanning. And they're using GrapheneOS as a proxy, like their servers, and then, or you can use Apple's. This is a free service they have. It's kind of nice. There's been like a few updates since I've had that. So essentially what this does is it takes your phone and it scans Wi-Fi's and it gives relatively good network, like it tells you like where you kind of are based on these access points. Due to like how Apple does it, they have like a lot, they've been scraping a lot of data to this, and they also did they're gonna eventually do it off cellular. It's gonna be like Wi-Fi scanning, cellular is gonna be the back end, and then they're gonna have a completely offline mode. And they're, I believe, Bluetooth as well. So if you got Bluetooth scanning on and network Wi-Fi scanning on, which as long as it's going through GrapheneOS servers and it's secure and it's staying private, I don't really think that that's a privacy issue. But say like you are in a very like uncellular area where you have bad cell service and you want really good accurate GPS data, like you're using like OpenStreetMaps, Organic Maps, which is this is what we use, does use this by default. Can use this by default. They can use network location based scanning. You can essentially get really, really, really good altitude support based on averages, altitude support. Like if you're in like the mountains or something. And like there's like a tower, like some towers like within the distance, but you don't have like good cell service or GPS service. This is kind of help to be able to determine your location. or if you're in a house that doesn't get good cell service, you can essentially do net. You can take apps that are based on GPS, and this can help solve that. It's going to have a completely off way. They're going to implicate a way that's going to be able to download to the device, essentially. And it's going to, when it's downloaded, it's going to be offline. It could be local. So that's like, you can scan these Wi-Fi access points that are public offline locally. Like, so that might be a more secure and private way to do it. It's a pretty much Apple Wi-Fi positioning API, either through the Graphene OS proxy or directly via Apple service, which is extended much more functionality in the near future, including or incorporating altitude into trailation, using cell towers if it provides better estimate than Wi-Fi, and using our own network location database, either via service or offline database downloads. They're in the process of building their own. Not only 5G and 4G only mode, they also have updated like all their apps, but pretty much support for blocking callers, not contacts. That's like huge. That's kind of like really nice, in my opinion. Graphene OS is like a usability is getting better and better. I think that pretty much all my apps run. I do run alpha, which can be kind of problematic. So I'm not trying to come from a complete experience based model because my experience is completely different than most people's. If you're on the standard build, you're probably going to have a better experience than me. Only because alpha is unstable. I ran into some issues, like some of my apps that I use crash pretty hard, which kind of sucks. So like, and it's very rare too. Like I only ran into like a couple, but it has happened where it was like a couple apps were like crashing completely. My banking apps, I had to remove the Hardin Malik compatibility layer for them to work. They work essentially. Now out of the box, it's not, I can't think of an app that hasn't worked. There are some apps that crashed, but like they're still functional. They're just like, I haven't ran into anything crashing lately. And if you do, and you want to take the crash logs, you can send them to the developers of Graphene OS and let them know, hey, this is happening, and it might help them fix stuff. Some other parts of their updates release beyond that is like just minor like, security patches for Android 15, drop 8 downstream, pretty much Graphene OS patches for upstream Android bugs, pretty much on all their other devices. Their patching is like just really good. Now the thing that just came, that just started working now, is the latest release 20.25.03.0.900. You can also get these updates through an atomic feed, by the way, for a feed reader. If you want like them updated completely straight to you to tell you to update it. There's release at support for the experimental virtual machine management app introduced in Android 15. It currently only provides support for managing a single VM and interacting with via web viewer based terminal. Android is in the process of adding support for graphics and GPU acceleration for a future release. For now, it's only available in developer mode. Due to being highly experimental, we don't recommend using it using developer options on a production device. But you can temporarily enable it to turn on this feature and turn on it back without it being disabled, like most developer options. You can able to turn on this feature and then turn them back off without being disabled, like most developer options. The data inside should be currently treated as disposable rather than relying on it losing it from a bug or backwards compatibility update. We plan to support choosing other guest operating systems beyond the Debian-based image provided by Android, along with taking more advantage of the virtualization infrastructure. From my understanding, is this could be eventually ported to the point where we could... you have to have an 8 and higher. They've already explained this. This isn't going to work on anything below below an 8. I think maybe a 7, but I'm pretty sure 8 is recommended, 8 and up, because of like the virtualization hardware and the ability to do it. So pretty much the goal of this would be to run Android and or Linux in a very secure sandbox environment, and it's portable. Is it going to be the best? Probably not. It's probably not going to be the most efficient, but imagine if you had certain specific applications that you want to be sandboxed off in a more secure environment. Because sandboxing and scaping, yes, obviously does exist, but it's much more hard and much more complicated. But to be able to do this, you could theoretically run certain apps in this virtual environment that might be more sensitive and more secure. This is essentially what Cubes OS does in a layman term, where I try to be charitable because I'm not a developer at the end of the day. I could be wrong on stuff, but Cubes OS essentially treats everything as it's been compromised or hostile. That is their theory. That is directly, you know, on their site. I believe they treat everything as is if it was compromised. Like, so this is directly from them. That's how I kind of treat GrapheneOS. And this is why, like, when you hear these bullet solutions, you kind of think like, okay, what are they trying to sell me? But no, I remember reading it somewhere, like, CubesOS assumes everything is pretty much hostile. I kind of agree though. Even if they don't say it, if I'm misquoting them or I'm just trying to remember where I thought that, I think that's how you should treat stuff. Treat everything as they can be compromised, hacked, and or not good. It's very important to understand that good security habits is also keeping your software up to date, keeping your microcode, like your firmware for your PC up to date, if security is like your highest importance, like genuinely. I think that's something that isn't talked about enough. This is why, like, Android phone vendors are generally not all equal. Android people are like, oh, Android gets viruses. I wouldn't really go that far, though you could say that it's not really Android that's getting the virus. It's just like these vendors are being very lazy and they're not implicating patching and updating like super fast like they should be. This is why it's not just updating software, it's also picking insecure hardware. And I mean, it's layers. Like, if your software, if your hardware is insecure, then it doesn't matter what secure software you have. Even laptop security is like, security is still something that you have to like take into consideration. Like, understanding like core boot and like how core boot works. Is it properly implicated? Yeah, etc. But I digress. You know, we have to take stuff like with a grain of salt. Like, if I put all this time into paranoid thinking and I do all this stuff, where it's like, all right, I got the secure hardware and I got the secure software and I got the secure laptop, but I still have bad password management, I still have bad OPSEC, and it doesn't fucking matter. You know what I mean? It's all a scale. It really is. You have to like kind of figure out like what you consider secure. What do you consider secure? What do you consider better? What do you consider, you know, what do and don't you care about getting exposed, etc. Now, is it going to be perfect? Like, should you go get like the most secure hardware, learn like how it works, and like put in Cubes OS and get a super long subscription to like Mulvad PPN and only use Tor? No, that would be like unrealistic and and stupid. Just like when people are like, just throw your phone out. Nothing is secure. Throw your PC out. Nothing is secure. That's just retarded. Find out what you think is important to you and focus. You know, threat modeling. That's generally what it is. That's all threat modeling is. Thinking about what's important, what's not important. Like, if I took a picture of a mountain and I told people I was in that location and I posted online and people already knew, like, I was going there, I don't really care who has that kind of information. I don't personally care who has that kind of information because it was known. I'm okay with people knowing it. I want people to know it. Now, that doesn't mean privacy shouldn't exist. That doesn't mean encryption shouldn't exist. That doesn't mean people should say that privacy doesn't matter, because it absolutely does. These are things that do matter. I still think that there's a growing amount of people that saying nothing is private. Privacy doesn't exist. That's such an autistic way to look at life. And I'm not a fan of it, too, because I think it's, you just sound like a Fed or like an ops or a pot, a honey pot, you know, pun intended or whatever. I just don't care. I lose a slight amount of respect for people that, like, I have nothing to hide. I don't care. Like, genuinely. Because it's not a me thing. It's a we thing. It's a we, like, a us thing. The better we do together. Like, the more people that use Tutanota and Signal and end-to-end encryption, the better it is. Just like browsers. The more people that use Tor browser, or Tor in general, the better it becomes. I2P, same thing. Like, we don't, that's why I'm like, I say we don't need like more secure apps. We don't need more apps, end-to-end encrypted apps. We just need more people to use the ones we already fucking got. We have a good list too anyways. Like, we have a, what do we have? So email, we have Tutanota, we have Gmail. There's ways you can encrypt your email, kind of like through PGP. But it doesn't encrypt like some of the most important stuff, like the metadata. But we have like Gmail, we have Yahoo, we have Proton, we have Tutanota, we have fucking Mailbox, I think. I mean, there's so many email providers, Disru, RiseUp, Onion Mail, I2P Mail, Bob Mail, PP Poo Poo Mail. You know what I mean? Like, we have so many that I don't think people fucking realize how many we have. I'm wondering if there's a way I can even look up how many email providers are there. And same thing with messaging. I wonder if the internet can even ask. Like, there's 10. I'm already seeing 14 email providers. There's so many. I think people don't realize how many there are. That's why I'm saying, like, we fucking stop. We don't need any more. Oh, my God. Why I don't like? Oh. We have these websites, HubSpot and, like, TechRadar and all them, they're just so cringe. They're terrible. We have so many email providers. We have Gmail. We have AOL. Like, the list just goes on. I could beat this Outlook. We could beat this like a dead horse. Yahoo. Fastmail. I forgot about them. Mail.com. You know what I mean? Shit like that. It's just like there's so many. Zoho. What the fuck is Zoho? I don't even know what Zoho is. You can just use alternative too and find so many alternatives. And it's same thing with SMS, like Signal, like encrypted chat apps. We don't need more encrypted chat apps. We just need good ones. We need good ones that have good standards, have a couple out, like have enough competition where it's like we're not relying on it, but we don't need to keep rewriting the wheel, reinventing the wheel. It's fucking messaging. The fact that people like Signal incorporated WhatsApp incorporated the Signal protocol says something. It means they trust that this is going to be good end encryption. Now, obviously, yes, if you're using fucking Signal, you're somewhere Mark Zuckerberg is maybe beating his meat that he's owning this. I personally wouldn't use WhatsApp. It would be like bottom of my list. I like SimpleX because I think they do it right. I like Signal. I use Molly, the fork. That's simple. Session sometimes. For like my very legacy old content, people I talk to. Maybe Briar. Maybe. I'm being like terrible with Briar. There's some problems. I don't really care for it. Like, I used it. I don't care for it. It's like very... The whole, like, decentralization that people bring up. But you can run your own Signal Relay. You can run your own SimpleX Relay. If you're that paranoid, do it yourself. You know, there's nothing stops you from going out and running it. People don't realize decentralization comes with a cost, too. Like, you have to get the mindset that this shit is free. And that we are very lucky that it's free. But there's a cost to it. That should put a fear in the back of your head when we're using all these products, services that we rely on that are free. So, like, these ones where it's, like, backed by some cryptocurrency or something like that, it's retarded. How are they paying these node operators with a shit coin that loses its value, like, every day or no one fucking cares about? Then what stops them from being malicious? I think there are good people out there that do have that do run... Like, I run a Tor node for free because I care about privacy. And it doesn't cost me anything besides electricity, like electricity cost. I would never run an exit node, like, out of my house, but I run a guard relay. I've been running a guard relay for a very long time because I want... And then if you're that way, if you're, like, super free, you can use Snowflake. Snowflake is out there because I want people to have access to the internet that are in censorship countries or were concerned about their privacy. I mean, it's crazy too. Like, it's like, we don't need more privacy coins out there. Monero has been the standard for so long for a reason. There is something called, Cake Wallet got it involved with it. I can't remember the name. But Zano. It says it's solving some things that maybe, like, you know what I mean? Like, that maybe be, kind of fucking it might be solving some issues that Monero has, but it's not really a fucking, like, I don't get what, we don't need another privacy coin. I mean, look at Zcash. Privacy by option, not by default. Monero is just by default. It gets delisted over and over and over, so it gets objectively harder to buy, and because it gets harder to buy, people don't want to put the time and effort into it. I'm luckily, like, this is all I do. If you want to take anything from this, you want to clip this and put it in the back of your pocket, write it down. I buy... there's ways you can do it through cash, like peer-to-peer. All I do is buy Bitcoin Lightning. I send it to my personal node. And then I take that and I use a swap for Lightning because it's so much cheaper. I will never pay on-chain transactions again. And I swap that Lightning for Monero and then send it to my wallet. And then for my spending, I take that Monero and I send it to another wallet, like Feather Wallet. I send it to Feather Wallet and then I use it to purchase stuff. This is how I pay Yellow Ball. This, you know, this is Josh takes fucking Monero. He didn't create his own token. You know what I mean? He didn't think about it. Like, do we need another token? No, we don't. It's fucking retarded. And it sucks because, like, it's kind of like messaging apps and VPNs and email services. We don't need more. We just need good ones. More doesn't equal always good. Like, and I'm pretty relatively on the side of competition because it protects the consumer at the end of the day. No competition, no price. Then you don't have to be price conscious. And not only you don't have to be price conscious, you don't have to fucking care about your users. Because you fear them going somewhere else. Competition helps create a safe ecosystem for the consumer at the end of the day. Not for the business. It might somewhat be safe for the business in an economic standpoint because, like, oh, if another company fucks up, then people will come to you. And I think that's how it should be. How it ought to be in more of a philosophical term. But at the end of the day, we don't need more. We just need better. And I think we have enough competition to just go look up how many email providers there are, how many VPN providers. You can start your own VPN service. You can get a white label VPN, start your own cum lord, pee pee poo poo retard, doo doo gaga, you know, fucking VPN service and charge XYZ and be done. Or just figure out how the other competition does it. And then build it yourself and, you know, show it on the top 10 VPN providers like Nord or whatever, or private internet access. It's frustrating to me because I think a lot of this stuff is shilled now to the point where people are starting to think these are silver bullets. Now, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and I am glad that more people are waking up to this. More people are becoming accustomed to signing up for more private email providers. I switched over to Tutanota from Proton. Longtime Proton subscriber, longtime Proton user. The price didn't even drive me out. I've been paying like their visionary, whatever the fuck their high, not their highest tier, but like one of their highest tiers for like years at this point. And same thing with Bitwarden. And I like Bitwarden. But I stepped away because I started to think to myself, what can I do to secure my digital sanity and my digital footprint as much as possible? Now, I'm not hosting my own email provider because fuck that. There's zero purpose in it. Your shit's always gonna get rejected, bounced, or it's annoying. You can't even self-host at home. You're gonna self-host on another server where you have God knows what the fuck they're doing. Same thing. Like, you know what I mean? Pointless. So, Tutanota accepts Monero. Got them. They have a very anonymous way to start up the account. This is something that I did not like about Proton. Proton did not allow me, when I got it, Proton did not let me pay with Bitcoin, I think, in the beginning. Or something. Like, there was something that it didn't allow me to do, and I was like, I don't like that. Tuta, I don't think they have an onion link. I don't think they do. Proton does. But these are like some things to think about. Tutanota doesn't use Google Analytics. They created their own push notification, and they do actually they actually use their own CAPTCHA system. And they also use something else. They use something else to prevent, like, they don't even use, Google Analytics on their tracking or their push notifications. But I don't think they have an onion link. Which kind of sucks. I believe there's now a way to do to get. I remember signing up for Proton through Tor, and it was a fucking nightmare. I hated it, and Tutanota. They wait. You have to like wait 48 hours for access, which is kind of annoying. They are a little bit slower with rolling stuff out. That is my pros. I like Tuta is doesn't rely on a lot of Google services. I like that it does that. The price is cheaper, but that's irrelevant. And there's a few other things like that. Like are like really good, but like it's very esoteric, like for me, for the average person. But the Proton did some things that I don't like. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like I think one is better than the other. Somebody pick it. You know what I mean? Pick Tutanota, pick Proton, Disroot, Fastmail. You know, pick a different email provider if you care about your privacy. That's generally what I'm trying to drive home. But that's not the whole, like, the whole theory behind it. Now, after, like, same thing, like, email, Signal, you know, SimpleX, Session if you need to, start encrypting your own data, start being self-sovereign. Like, sovereign your, not even just sovereign, like, your data point, sovereign yourself from these tech companies that are literally not just monopolies, but do not care about their people. If we had a better system that could protect the people, then these channels like this probably wouldn't fucking exist. If privacy was given as a human right, I wouldn't have to fucking yell into the cloud, probably at all. I probably wouldn't even care. I'd probably still be on Windows. No, I went to Windows for, not because of privacy. I went to Windows for something else, because of a performance. It's lighter, no blow, but beyond the point. I think that we are heading into I don't think we're heading into like a techno dystopian era, to be honest. I don't like virtue signaling, and I don't like fear mongering. There's a lot of channels that do that, and I know it gets better clicks and better views and better look. It looks better and it looks sexier. But I think that I'm waking up, because I'm starting to run into people in real life. I've had Proton for a very long time. Last year, somebody gave me their Proton email address. It was like, based. Just a couple months ago, someone gave me their Proton email address. I'm like, based. Someone saw my just a stranger. He's like, hey, I love Proton. Like, I really like their, I really like them as a company. And I was like, yeah. And they were very knowledgeable about it. Even, I'm starting to see more people reject giving their email in public. Like, I was standing in line, the representative asked somebody for their email, and they're like, I don't really want to give that at all. And they're like, oh, it's for like XYZ, like warranty or whatever. And they're like, I'll just save the receipt. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they fought back. They weren't a dick about it. I guarantee the fucking rep didn't want to even do that, but he's probably got someone sweating behind him, like, get the signups, get the email, get this. You know what I mean? Shit like that. And they're just doing their job, and it sucks. It's like, it sucks being in an industry where that might not even align with your values. So that's just like, just the status quo now is, can I get your number? Can I get your email? Thank you. Have a nice day. And people are just like, yes, 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 yes. Well, stop it. Stop saying yes. I mean, minus my tangent. minus my tangent and me going off the rails. I think that it's good that people are not only waking up to this, but it's good that we are also doing the best we can. I just don't like the fear mongering, to be completely honest. Fear mongering is not, it's not good, and it doesn't help people transition. You just look paranoid and schizophrenic. You look schizzed, and that doesn't make it better for people to transition to a more private and secure manner. Now, if we can look at some other perspectives, this is something that I think that also needs to be talked about. Cryptocurrency. Now, Bitcoin isn't going anywhere. Can it go to zero? Yeah, probably. Can anything go to zero? Sure. Likely? Maybe not. I don't know. I'm not an economist, so like I have my opinions about Bitcoin now. I do not like the direction it's going personally, but this is something that is getting ingrained in mainly old people, Zoomers, and young people are just dumping money into the cryptocurrency that they don't know, and they're just gambling. Now, Encrypted Hub deploys a ransom. This is from Hacker News. Encrypted Hub deploys ransomware and stealer via Trojan apps, PPBI service, and phishing. This is something. Oh, sorry, wrong one. Safe Wallet confirms North Korean trader hackers stole $1.5 billion in Byte heist. Safe Wallet has revealed that the cybersecurity incident that led to the Byte $1.5 billion crypto heist is highly sophisticated state-sponsored attack, stating that North Korean threat actors behind the hack took steps to erase traces and the malicious activity in effort to hamper investigation efforts. The multi-signature, multi-sig platform, which has roped in Google Cloud mainnet too. Why are people using the... The thing is, because people don't understand how cryptocurrency works, they're using these online like multi-sig wallets, these online services, these online exchanges, and they're leaving it there. Like, why? Like, why? Quit doing it. This is all you got to do. Like, SafeWallet, why use any of these services? Stealth currency with multi-signatures. Make it yours with modules and guard loop. Access to 130. Like, fuck that. This is all you got to do. I mean, what SafeWallet is. Secure smart account management on Ethereum. Yeah. A $1.5 billion hack. You know how you don't get hacked? You don't put that shit online. You don't put it in a fucking wallet that can be accessed by anyone. Look, there are some apps that I have. There's some software. I'm not gonna say what wallets I have for just my own purpose, but there's a couple Monero wallets that I have used. Not that I necessarily hate all types of wallets, but this is something to think about. I have a long-term cold storage wallet, long-term cold storage hardware wallet that does not touch the internet. I send my cryptocurrency there. It is not online. I have my Mnemonic seed. Separate. You can even set up a multi-sig where I forget what it's called. It's called a multi-sig. It's a multi-sig wallet. Shamir is what I use. It's like a split wallet. And this is like something that I think people need to like kind of like wrap their head around. So, where is it? What is it? This is actually really cool. So, in Trezor, you can do something. You can do something really cool. Wherever. Protected by security. Where is it? It's got it somewhere. Multi-share backup. There we go. You can run your shit over Tor too. And it's got two-factor authentication, FIDO2 standards. This is a really cool thing. So you can do a multi-sig Shamir backup. And And I guess like the easiest way to explain it with, I gotta like actually like read it. It's not my, this wasn't like planned. This is not in my, this isn't in my notes, but I just think this needs to be something that's explained to people. Like, you having an air-gapped wallet is not only very, 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 like, way better on security. You also have to understand, like, hardware, like, the hardware, hope that the hardware security is there, and just have a good backup, not even just a good backup plan. There's something called Superbacked that you could take, like, your Mnemonic Seed, and you take the Mnemonic Seed, and you can separate it by three, where is it? Shamir Backup Options. Yeah, this is it. Damn it, fucking Reddit is blocking me because I'm using... Here's what it is. I hate Reddit. What is Shamir? This is what I'm looking for. I swear if I get blocked. This is the only bad thing about using Tor is, like, you get fucking blocked in, like... Or, like, if you're using a VPN. Shamir's secret sharing isn't... It's or labeled SSSSSSSSSS, a blockchain. In cryptography, secret sharing refers as the general concept dividing confidential information, a secret, into multiple parts or shares. By splitting up the secret, no single person has access to the full secret. Only when you combine the individual shares from each person, you can access the complete secret. Plus, with secret sharing, the information is also encrypted, meaning that no single custodian has any usable knowledge about the secret. Meaning, there are no closer to guessing the secret than someone with no shares at all. In short, secret sharing allows you to safeguard your information with multiple custodians who must each confirm that they will reveal their portion of the secret, such as widely used for safeguarding extremely sensitive information, such as biometric or even passcodes to control missiles. Of course, this is extremely secure, but it has one fatal flaw. It requires every single custodian. What happens if this custodian is on holiday, or worse, the custodian dies? In practice, using secret sharing is only possible when you can guarantee every participant is placed practical. Now, Shamir's secret sharing. In 1979, Adi Shamir, the co-creator of the oldest, most famous encryption technique, published a paper on how to share a secret. In this paper, he explained a new solution for the problem, a cryptographic algorithm called Shamir's secret sharing. To put simply, Shamir's secret sharing algorithm does not require all the custodians to reconstruct the secret. That means, should a custodian become unavailable, recovery would be still possible. Plus, it achieves this while still keeping the full secret hidden from custodians as long as they don't meet the threshold. In practice, it's a little more technical than that, so let's see how it works. So, a shared threshold refers to the minimum number of shared required to lock the main net secret. This may be different from secret to secret. Essentially, the sharehold must be maybe as little custodians is needed. For example, if the shared threshold is 2, anyone with at least 2 shares won't be able to, and with less than 2 shares won't be able to obtain any useful information for their shares. To put simply, not all shares need to be present to unlock the main secret. And this has a few key benefits. Encryption distributed shares. One of the biggest risks of cryptographic secret sharing is trusting the custodians you do not know. You have no idea if they might be malicious. They might even refuse to cooperate once they own a piece of the secret. This is why SSS uses encryption to ensure the shared isn't revealed, doesn't reveal anything about the overall secret. Using an encrypted method called polymio interpolation, it ensures only the predefined number of custodians can unlock the secret. To clarify, it guarantees that the secret is only unlocked knowing if you know at least N out of M total valuables specifically. So, in crypto, let's use a secret recovery phase, for example. The sequence is 12 to 24 random words, just like any other, such as you can use Shamir secret sharing to create a backup of your crypto wallet. There's a lot of reasons you might want to do this. Untrusted health moves, how Shamir secret sharing works with ledger recovery, Shamir secret sharing, how to share it safely. So the core fundamental of this is to take your secret and back it up, take these and back them up. So you have full ownership over the funds. You're only as safe as your smart recovery, secret recovery phase. It's perfect world. The sheet of paper with recoveries would be secure enough, unfortunately, as long as some kind of blah, 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 some other shit. Okay. So you can distribute this securely with people that you ultimately trust. Now, you could also do it this way. Superback is another thought. If you have a mnemonic seed, like a 24 mnemonic seed, and you want you backup type, like, you know what I mean? Say it's a phrase. Pretty much, this is like the same concept. It uses really good encryption option. And what you do is you essentially distributed two of three blocks required. So that means, so say you take your key, your secret is like key pass, passphrase, and your proton TOTP, your secret. Passphrase, you put a passphrase on it. You distribute, you need three of the paper backups, two of the three paper backups to make sure it works. And I would test this in theory. I would not in production, not later. Like, I wouldn't test this 20 years down the line. I would test this now. Now, this obviously assumes that the software will still be there in 20 years. This also assumes that this will be the co-founder's son is still alive and still maintaining it. It is open source. It's now free. They have a good way of how they're doing this. They have something called an operator. Superback operators are institutional custodians who custody client blocks, evaluate governance and resilience of distributed backups. You have to give them money or something. How much does it cost to become an operating? It's like $5,000 per year plus one-time deployment and travel fee. It's pretty much wealth managers. He kind of like talks about why to become an operator. Learning the program where they're, it's an interesting concept. I don't really know what it's beyond that, but they have really good documentation on how it works. It's pretty, they kind of like make it simple. So go get yourself a Trezor wallet, do the Shamir backup, and give it to someone you trust very deeply. Or don't even tell them the amount that you need. Say you need four. Three of the four need to be there. Give two to your partner and keep the other three. And, you know what I mean? Like, try to figure out, like, a good way. Or, like, maybe one to your brother, one to your mom. Like, and say you need three and you're going to keep two, and then you want in like a safe vault, like in a bank. No one needs to be alive for that. You know what I mean? Banks just need to hopefully exist, like a public vault. Like, no one, if someone finds this, whatever, they don't have the remaining amount. Now, obviously I would put these on QR codes, paper, whatever. Laminate it, vault it, secure it, and I'd make maybe one more copy of each just in case. You can never be too safe. I would say just go. I don't use Ledger. I don't like them personally, but I would go look at Ledger's website about it. They have a pretty good explanation on how it works. Or you can go on Reddit or pretty much anywhere else. As long as you're not running a VPN, Reddit will be your friend. But Ledger has a really good explanation on how Shamir secret sharing, how to share secrets safely, how it works. Your funds are only as safe as your secret recovery phase. You got to remember that. It's important... it's important to run your own node. Like, this is another thing. Quit, run your own Bitcoin node, run your own Monero node, quit having all this information, all this money, and links to you on a fucking KYC agent. I don't think I've ever had a problem with spending my Monero. I think this is something that people bring up, like, well, it's on a hardware wallet. How do you spend it? Trezor makes it very easy. They have a mobile wallet. They make it pretty easy to spend. And I have had no issue buying stuff. I can just buy prepaid cards if I'm that worried. Like Cake Wallet has. So, like, this is all I got to do. Very, very easy way to do this. I take my Trezor wallet. I plug it into my Cubes OS, my laptop, the mobile app, whatever. I send, say, $50 to Cake Wallet. Say I need a $50 gift card to go spend in the real world. I send it, costs, let's say, like $5, $2 to send, because, you know, Bitcoin's mainnet's fucking dog shit. I would prefer, hopefully there's a way I can move around Lightning faster. I mean, I have a Lightning node, so, like, when I was on vacation in another country, I literally, there was a place that accepted Bitcoin Lightning, and I just, boom, tapped it, went straight from my node over Tor into their bank account. It was immediate. It was awesome. I loved it. As long as they can accept Lightning, I'm pretty solid. I don't have to do anything extra because I have access to my Tor node all the time, like my Lightning node all the time that's running over Tor. Monero, I've used it in some, like, for a lot of, like, gift cards. Cake Wallet, Monero Wallet, they both, you know, I just take it, I exchange it for a gift card, I get it virtually, and then I just use it virtually if I need to. If I need a physical one, they'll send it to you. That's kind of dumb, but if you have a PO box or a virtual address or maybe a close family relative or friend, and you're just, like, send them out to me, that's something that you could definitely, like, think about. Like, the delivery method is not as, like, really important because it's, at the end of the day, it's just a virtual card. You can put whatever name you want. You can put whatever address you want. It's not really going to correlate to you as much. But it allows you to spend even now. Now, it obviously takes more time and it's more tedious. But if you do a lot of online stuff, that's an option. Like, say you need to pay your utilities or your bills. You don't have to go on public for that. So you could take, you know, say your phone bill is like $50, go buy some Monero, prepaid, boom. And there you go. Mint Mobile, whatever. You know, they're not, like, really as much of, like, an extra step as everyone makes them out to be. And by the way, like, validating transactions when you run your own Monero node, like receiving, sending, way faster. Syncing's faster, sending's faster. It's once one block is, like, pretty much confirmed, you're solid. So that's something to always keep in mind, is, like, running your own node, just like Lightning, it's just way faster and more efficient. And I think that's what you need to take in. This isn't like cryptocurrency shell, like, it's going to pump and make you rich. You're not going to get, Monero's ideology isn't based on to get become rich. It's to preserve your privacy and reduce your digital footprint. This is why a lot of I respect when, I understand why some don't want to, but I respect when a company that is promoting privacy, they have an option to buy with Monero. This is why I like Molvad, because they have an option. This is why I like Privacy Goods, digital proxy, because they accept Monero, which is good. You get discounts. If some places do discounts, Menta Allah's website accepts Monero. I just don't know why. Like, I get why, but, like, it's frustrating, because if these guys can accept Monero and still function legally, there obviously is a reason. They're doing something that is allowing them to accept Monero and maybe convert it to cash and then pay their taxes or operate legally or whatever. That's the point. So until we can find a way, I guess, until it's more just as efficient as Lightning, I can see why it's a hard sell, but I don't know. I've had, like, nothing but good experiences, really. I haven't been scammed from, like, any, like, site or anything when I sent Monero. I've been like, I think the worst was I did a swap on Wizard Swap and it just took so long. It made me nervous that I got fucked, but I ended up receiving it. Now, that would be my advice, is get your shit off the exchange. These crypto heists aren't even new. Like, you could have your life, people are putting their life savings into crypto, they're putting in these exchanges, these KYC exchanges, and then it's getting fucking funneled on, they're getting dumped on, and say it's not FDIC insured. Say it's not insured at all, they're like, sorry, that doesn't seem like an us problem, it seems like a you problem. This is why you should never keep your crypto in any exchange, especially not just KYC exchanges, just any exchange at all. They may not be in a position where they don't have to refund your money, which would be insane, but who cares? You know, that's the point. Like, all these old people that are putting their life savings into these exchanges is absolutely insane to me. And they don't even back up their data. Like, they don't back up shit. They don't understand that their crypto wallet and their keys and, like, their mnemonic phrase is, like, somewhere safe. Like, I don't know. It's just... It's absolutely bonkers to me. I don't even know if there's like a good answer to that. But most importantly, just make sure you do that at the bare minimum. Personally, go get a hardware wallet and secure your digital future. Look into Superbacked. Remember to... be skeptical of when websites are promising you a silver bullet solution. And I'll check you guys out in the next rant, which will be coming up soon. I'm trying to like figure out a schedule. Hopefully I'll figure it out someday. And I'll see you guys later.